Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello everyone, welcome again to another edition of Insane in the Fembrain.
Fembrain.
Greetings everybody. I hope, again, I know I say this all the time, but I genuinely hope you're all well. I hope you're doing fine. I hope the things aren't getting to you too much, and you know you I hope that you've all got someone around you that you can reach out and have a chat with. You know, it's important. It comes up a lot on Insane in the Fembrain and Insane in the Membrane. We communication comes up a lot all the time. So I hope that you do have people to reach out to, and thank you to everyone that has reached out to me. I get some lovely messages from people. Thank you for doing that. It's really nice to chat to you. It helps me as well. I like to have a chat to people, and it makes me realise that I'm shutting myself away, and I shouldn't. And so thank you for reaching out. Appreciate that. This week I was joined by Jade Adams's best friend, Rebecca Wynne Kelly. She's a fine artist. When I met her, she was the owner of Milgi, which was the original sort of vegetarian restaurant in Cardiff. So if anyone from Cardiff, I love Cardiff. I've got a lot of love for Wales. Wales gets a lot of stick, and I don't know why, because it's such a beautiful place, filled with beautiful people. It's stunning, and I'm glad that they shut the bridge to stop us idiots taking the virus over there. They're good people, and Rebecca is one of the best I've ever met. She's so lovely, and I got to speak to her at the beginning of the lockdown. She was staying with her parents out in West Wales, over sort of Aberystwyth way. And her dad is a fantastic artist and in his own right. And Rebecca's like sort of following in the footsteps. She's a very interesting woman, very talented, and really easy to talk to. It was really nice to have a proper chat with her, because we've chatted before, but you know, we're normally three sheets to the wind, and so it becomes more of a heated debate rather than a sort of a level-headed chat. But it was really nice to speak to her. As a trigger warning as well for this one, we do talk about suicide. There's no way of sugarcoating that. We talk about that. We talk about the effects of suicide, and you know, to the people that are left behind. So just so you know, just before you get into it, in case anyone's listening, and you know they've got that going on, just so you know, we are respectful throughout. So don't think we're not. You know, the score. You've been listening to this for a long time. So just so you know, but it was really nice to have a chat with Rebecca. She's a top person, and it was great. So let's stop me waffling. Here's Rebecca Wynne Kelly.
So West Wales, that's where I've been. It's really rural and
beautiful up there.
It's beautiful. It absolutely is. So why wouldn't you want to go back there, really? However, Cardiff, you know, filled with joy and friends. And
yeah,
it's really lifted my spirits to see people, actually.
But I think that's, life
Yeah, life affirming. You know, it's been hard for lots of people.
Well, that's it, isn't it? It's made us realise how sociable human beings are, and that's how we thrive and what we thrive on. And isolation is what kills us, you know.
It's used as torture, isn't it? And also, I think it's reassuring for all of us to realise that we are kind of tactile human beings, and the kind of subtlety of touch that we sort of experience every day with, you know, just passing someone in a supermarket and, you know, little tap on their back or excuse me or whatever. You don't realise how many times a day you're touched, and then when you're denied that, it's pretty intense.
Yeah.
Hugging, unfortunately. There's been a lot of hugging.
Yeah, I think we're all kind of, what we do, what we because we hugged someone the other day, but we kind of, you go through the backstory first and you kind of go, okay, yeah, we locked ourselves down straight away. We haven't really spoken to anyone. And then that person goes, yeah, same. We kept away from everyone. We've not been anywhere. You know, we might have had it ages ago, but we're not contaminated now. And then we go, yeah, bring it in. Come on.
Yeah.
I'm sure we're fine.
And isn't it, but there are some people who aren't into it, and you know what, when you start a conversation with that person and we'll do what we're all doing, which is like, are you hugging? And then you kind of like see the smile in someone's face, which is like, yeah, of course we are. And then other people who are like, oh, actually I'm not. Yeah. And then you sort of start a conversation with that person and you can't really concentrate because you haven't shared that like energy and that those sort of endorphins that get released when you squeeze someone, you know.
That's right. Yeah,
so it's,
there's a lot of judges, yeah, there seems to be a lot of judgment as well when you're out. If you're, like, I went out the other day, I was in the supermarket and I took my mask off because my glasses were steaming up. So I couldn't see what I was doing. I literally just took it off for a minute and I was just, so my glasses stopped so I could just see what I wanted. And this guy walked past me like I just shat on his kids. And I'm like, all right, mate, chill out. You know, I'm just trying to see the gravy. You might want to just relax a little while. Just trying to get the bisto, mate. Relax.
Just trying to get the bisto. Yeah. Yeah. Well, everything's changed, isn't it? It's like, what was life before COVID? It's difficult to sort of ask yourself that question, really, isn't it?
Yeah,
exactly. What was I into? What was I doing? It's all, everything's changed, you know?
Yeah.
Everything's
exactly.
Shifted. And I don't know, like for me, it's like, you know, or everyone, I guess, it's, when are the galleries going to open? When's the Arts Council going to be back up and running?
Yeah.
When do we get to kind of do the international residency? So it's been a lot of rethinking, I think, for everyone, really.
Yeah. It's been interesting seeing the you know, like with comedy, stand live performances have gone, like music and comedy, and like you say, the galleries have shut down.
How are you feeling about
theater.
That? Because I guess when you're writing a show I would imagine when you're a stand-up, you know, and obviously I've seen a lot of stand-up in my time, and it's that kind of, you don't really know if a joke's funny until you share it with an audience, really, do you? So it's quite difficult to
It's a weird
gauge.
One.
Yeah.
You How kind of, it, it? Well, it's like with you with art, you know, you the longer you're in it, the more, like, you know what a good piece of art looks like, or what a good piece of art is like to you. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, and exactly.
It's like
with
comedy, you kind of know, you go, that you there's something in your brain just goes, that's a good idea. That's got something that has. And you keep chipping away at different gigs. You sort of like, you slide it in amongst all the stuff that is already working. And then you work it out that way, you know, these little ideas. And yeah, so it's like anything, really. The longer you do it, the more skills you create. But having it taken having it taken away in the speed that it was taken away in as well, it was like overnight, 20 minutes.
Savage, mate, savage.
Yeah, and it had gone. Everything, the 15 years I've been working up to where I was at, just gone. And you're like, holy shit, all the sacrifices that were made, all the relationships that have crumbled, all the people that I've fallen out with, all the things I've built, everything that you were kind of, it was all, you go, fuck, it was all built on sand. Like that old cliche, isn't it? That castle's built on sand. And you're like, shit. And then you see like the government talking about, you know, we're not, you know, that everybody needs us. They need galleries and they need museums and they need art and they need
sure.
comedy and music. But it's the last thing that kind of gets invested in, you know.
Especially in a Tory government.
Oh, God, I know. Yeah,
mad,
isn't it?
I guess we don't really know. I mean, I'm filled with fear about what's to come. You know, there have been many amazing, many sort of things that have come out of COVID that I've been sort of hoping for and sort of campaigning for a while, like, you know, stop the flights and kind of shop locally and look after yourself and slow down. You know, that's one of the reasons I sort of quit the restaurant. Really the restaurant industry, because, you know, life is like takes over and sort of built on this kudos of like, how busy are you? You know, oh, I'm 60 hours a week busy. Oh, I'm 80 hours a week busy. Oh, that must mean you're more successful and more kind of relevant than me. So, you know, I sort of felt quite burnt out by that. And I think the whole world was burnt out by that. And, you know,
absolutely.
And you sort of imagined that, you know, it wouldn't ever be possible to get the world to slow down like it just has. So for me, it's kind of an interesting concept to watch other people kind of be forced into something that I was kind of trying to do personally, you know, and it's been great to share that with people and, you know, finally talk to my friends, you know, who are normally really busy and het up and stressed out, for them just to be kind of, in a way, slightly, obviously there's fears and anxieties about the future, but to feel that little bit more relaxed about not having to compete all the time, you know?
Definitely.
I had a chat to a friend the other day, and he's a musician, and he said, you know, it's quite nice that everything's just like an even playing field. You know, you don't have to worry that that band's getting a gig in a festival and you're not, or that that person's just got a record deal, or, you know, it's sort of a leveler, isn't it, really? Which has been quite refreshing. Yeah.
I think that's it. You've seen, you know, I've seen people that, like people that are famous suddenly are popping up on podcasts, and we're having conversations with people that would have ordinarily been out of reach. Because like you say, we've all been, it's all been leveled. It's all like, oh shit, we're, doesn't matter where you were, like you've just said about this band getting that gig or whatever. And when this happens, it's so universal and affected everybody equally. Like, oh shit, you know, it's like, okay, yeah, right. I think that... It really brought home how fragile human beings really are. You know that how quickly someone was they literally just walked past somebody in a shop and now they're not here anymore. You're like, fucking hell.
Yeah.
That's quite something to get your head around, you know?
It's been intense.
Yeah. And it's made me contact people as well. And I've had contact from people that I haven't spoken to in a while. You know, we just kind of were busy and then they just reached out and they're like, you're all right, mate. I'm like, yeah. And then somebody else, I'm like, do you need anything? Are you all right?
Yeah.
And there was that positive stuff as well.
Well, I suppose that goes back to us sort of, you know, having time to reflect. And I mean, you know, I went, I've spoken to you a little bit, touched on that before about Finland and kind of like, I went there in February and the idea was to sort of be in silence for 3 days and make artwork. And, you know, that chance to sort of reflect and to really kind of go within yourself and switch off from the rest of the world and not engaged as you usually do on a day-to-day basis. And there's a lot of soul searching that gets done in those times. And I think that although we've still been chaotic with the amount of kind of access we have to, you know, internet and online platforms, and that can feel chaotic on a daily basis or an hourly basis or however long how often you decide to engage with these platforms. But ultimately we have all had time to think, you know, think about what's important to us and to sort of let go of those feelings of the past, which were like, I must do, I must succeed, I must be richer, I must be, you know, have more houses or more children or whatever that may be. Or so, yes.
Yeah. How easy was it for you when you went to Finland on that retreat to switch off, like you say, silence for three days?
It was really difficult. So, you know, when you talk about silence, it's, you know, it doesn't have, so, you know, an opportunity to switch off from everything to, you know, we have verbal diarrhea. Most people do. A feeling comes into your mind and, you know, or a thought, and you share it, and you generally share that with friends, and then you get a reaction from your friends and they lead you onto maybe another feeling or encourage you to not feel that way about it. So, you know, when you're there in silence, what happened to me, I mean, it might be different for other people, but, you know, I kept hearing the sounds of people. So, like, not voices and words as such, but, like, the sound of maybe someone, like, smoking a cigarette or their footsteps or how they sound when they brush their hair or, like, really subtle kind of engaging sounds that filled me with kind of comfort because it's challenging to be alone. And then what happened to me basically was that, you know, I was really struggling to find that silence because it's chaotic. It's like a silent symphony, really. There's a lot going on. And then the only time I found silence was when I couldn't hear the sound of a friend of mine. And, you know, that stopped me. And then there was silence. And, you know, that was because I didn't remember the sound of her because she had committed suicide, you know, over a decade ago, 30, maybe much longer. And it was only her that was able to silence me. And then that's where the work came. And that's how I was able to sort of like move forward. But very, very, very difficult to find silence. And even, you know, I mean, I'm sure you've touched on meditation and well-being and kind of, you know, body scanning and this sort of stuff, but you never really find it unless something, I guess, is as shocking as not remembering what your friend sounded like all these years later and kind of feeling sad for that, because she wasn't in the sounds, you know, she wasn't there causing mayhem and chaos. I tried really hard.
Yeah. So the point is
that it's like when you're, you know, when you're allowing like life to rest, it does conjure up lots of emotions about, you know, losses and grief and things like that. I think most people, contemplation.
So many people were commenting online about their dreams, how insane their dreams had become, because you know, all their work had been taken away, or you know, they were trapped inside indoors, and
the theory behind that, wouldn't it be that, like, I guess we go out, you know, say you go out in London on an average day, or Cardiff, or anywhere, and the amount of faces you see and just the things that are surrounding you, when you take all that away, you've just got yourself.
Yes.
So your dreams are going to, I guess, like, you know, sort of connect to what's further down.
That's exactly what, there was a piece in National Geographic about it, and they were saying that's what it is, because you've taken away all the other things, you're left with what the residue that's in your brain already. So you start remembering people from years ago that you've not thought about in ages, and music it was like you'd gone up in the loft in your brain and like, oh, right, okay, let's sort this shit out. And that's what they said, that it was a very, as you've said, it's, you're dealing with what you've, yourself and what's in you with how did you cope with your friend pass away? Like, we've talked about suicide on Insane in the Membrane, and people, I've talked to people that have attempted it, thought about it. I've thought about it myself, you know, in some places. And I spoke to someone else about this, and they were saying when you get those thoughts, you're not actually, 9 times out of 10, you're not really, you don't really want to get rid of yourself. What you're trying to do is get rid of the bit that's hurting you. And so your brain's going, well, just, like, it's like a reset. You go, like, if you just get rid of, you can't really comprehend the fact that if you kill yourself, there's no coming back from that. But what you're trying to do is kill the sadness. You don't really want to kill yourself. And that's what got me through it. I'm going, oh, yeah, that makes sense. So why don't I try and deal with the bit that's giving me, that's creating those thoughts, rather than get rid of myself completely, you know?
Yeah, I think you're right. There's a difference between people who kind of don't want to live the life they're living anymore and the people who don't want to live.
Yeah.
So I think, like you say, we've all been there, you know, I don't want this life, you know, I can't deal with this pain, or I can't deal with, and I think lots of the time for people, it's like, you know, especially people who suffer from mental health, you know, issues, and they kind of feel some sadness, they then start to feel guilty about projecting that onto other people and how the world would seem better off without them, and wouldn't it be easier if I just wasn't here?
Yeah.
But, you know, of course, most of us are able to, well, you know, I'm really lucky, I don't think I've ever really felt like that, and I feel blessed to have not felt like that, because I've had many friends who have. And I think, you know, for her in particular, it was a very special, well, not very special, because it happens to lots of people, you know, she didn't feel human because of what had happened to her when she was a child, and how, you know, she had been abused, and she had decided as a young woman that she wanted to share her story. And, you know, this was pre Jimmy Savile and pre-historical abuse, and, you know, and she walked into that, you know, into the police station and told her story, and, you know, the answer was there's not enough evidence, and the world went on. And, you know, for her, I think that was the nail in the coffin, so to speak. God, that was an awful the nail. Well, that was fifth gear over the cliff into, you know, into the sea, which is how she did it. But, you know, so how did, suicide, you know, So I think that for her, it was a necessary act.
She just had that awful thing happen to her, and then,
well, this just, is it, isn't when it? Rich?
The world's not listening to you. You're like, I'm telling you what's happened, and none of you are listening to me. What is the point?
I know, I'm experiencing that once again with a friend of mine who is going through quite a similar set of circumstances. And, you know, the fascinating thing about it all is you kind of think that these sorts of things I don't know, like coercive control or child abuse, there's sort of things that might happen to other people, like maybe not like strong, powerful women that go to medical school and, you know, graduate from Central St. Martin's College of Art. You know, it's quite, for me, still feels sort of unexpected that I would know people that are going through this or know women that are going through this. But, you know, abuse and suicide, you know, whether you're male, female, non-binary, or, you know, wherever you stand, no one's exempt from the pain that other people can cause you, you know, and that's a real shame, I think. And, you know, that's not a gender-based feeling. I think that's a human thing that, you know, it really stresses me out that humans have capacity to hurt one another like they do.
Well, it seems to me, it's like, and this isn't saying that all men are beasts and all, but it's, I've yet to meet a woman that hasn't had something awful happen to her when she was younger, or some kind of assault, or some kind of molestation in some way, shape, or form. And it just like, it gets me.
Yeah.
I start
it's
thinking,
some kind of Me Too, I think, is probably a, you know, like a wide, like, I mean, the Me Too movement obviously highlighted, you know, that every, like you say, most women, a huge percentage of women that you meet have experienced some kind of derogatory comments, or, you know, being looked at because being sort of treated as if you're not kind of capable of making a decision that could, like, you know. But, you know, I think, you know, what I want to say, though, in all of this is that I've run a restaurant and I ran it for 13 years, and, you know, I relied on both male and female and, you know, all sorts of people to help me run the restaurant. And I will say that throughout all of that, I had, you know, so much respect from my male colleagues that really sort of stood behind me and were really into the idea that these two sisters had set up this restaurant. And, you know, I've been supported massively by men in the workplace, and kitchens are tough, you know, they're really tough. Yes. I mean, well, you've spoken to, you've already, you know, perhaps met some chefs, some female chefs, and, you know, they're quite intense environments. And most of the time, well, especially in my restaurant anyway, when I guess maybe I was the boss, which maybe helped, supported and loved by, you know, many of the male colleagues that I've worked with. But like you say, of course, there were exemptions and, you know, times where I was undervalued and underrated as a female employee and a chef, really. So, But yeah, I think you're right about this. I think women feel that, like, women have felt that sort of pain through the ages, but there are ways to overcome that. You know, I feel like there are ways, and, you know, I don't know, for me, I think maybe education's like been one of those things. I mean, setting up the business and having the sort of reputation that it had and building a brand like that, and then sort of deciding 13 years in that, you know, or 10 years in, because the last 3 years of it, that it was like, I'm ready, you know, I've said I want to climb this mountain, I've climbed it and it's the wrong one. So what do I do about that? And for me, it was like, right, I re-educate myself, I go back to school and I get my brain working, and then, you know, and then I'll decide what's right. So, you know, there are ways of kind of overcoming those feelings of insecurities as a female, or feeling how you're going to ever stand up or compare to a male sort of colleague or kind of peer.
It's only been in, there's been, you know, changes have been happening for decades now, but very slow changes, you know, and
we're still haven't moved on.
No, exactly. You look, you know, now,
like,
and you
we're like, we're not, it's not just accepted. Like, if as a, I mean, you know, I could get quite feisty about this, because, you know, for me, what's happening in my life now, you know, I had a friend, you know, I just graduated. And, you know, I was young and, I didn't really think anything like that. I was shocked by the story that she told me of her abuse that she suffered. And I was shocked that she took her own life because of that abuse that she suffered. And then roll on, I mean, however many years later, 15 years, 16 years later, I've got a friend who's close to me that's going through exactly the same thing. And you do sort of turn around, you think, well, what's the, you know, we've just had this huge movement with Me Too. And like you say, we've come so far as women, and we've moved on, and we would hope that people would have taken that information on board and listened and changed. But, you know, the system is still screwed when it comes to being female.
Oh, absolutely.
You can't just walk into a police station and say, this thing has happened to me, and expect to be believed and that, that justice will be done for you.
We've got there's an American comedian called Chris D'Elia, and he's just had a load of allegations put against him from saying that he's been trying to solicit naked. He's been trying to hook up with people underage.
Right. Okay.
I mean, I don't know if it's true. I just know it's just come out, and there's loads of women have come out and accused him of this thing, and people are, straight away, it's like people are going, well, you've got to prove it. You go, yeah, but let's listen to the stories first.
Exactly. Like, how can you ask a woman to, you know, record every conversation she has with a man case he decides to, you know, make a pass at her or degrade her in some way or control her in some way? Like, it's not realistic to expect anyone to be recording their lives just in case someone attacks them or rapes them or, you know, and like you say, it's like, where's the evidence? What does that mean? Do we not trust each other? Do we not trust people to sort of be... Yeah. I mean, no one makes up the kind of shit that, why would you make that up?
Well, that's it.
Why would someone make that up?
Well, it's more than one person. So you go, well, surely there's no way that these people that are complete strangers to each other have gone, oh, yeah, let's jump on this bandwagon. Let's bring this bloke down. It's like there's got to be an element of truth in there somewhere. So that's what should be investigated. But I mean, social media.
But what are we protecting? Are we protecting masculinity? Are we protecting men's rights to treat women how they feel? Or, you know, I don't know. I'm not really sure what society and culture is protecting.
No, there's a couple of people have been saying, well, it's funny that none of his colleagues, the other American comics, none of them have come out and said anything. No one's sort of getting involved, and then someone else said, "Oh, all the British comedians that are mouthing off about this. I hope you're as vocal when it's your colleagues." And I have. There's been a couple of times when I've been told something that is true, and I've said, "All right." And then I've been in a room with that person, and I've just said, "Look, mate, I've got to say something to you. Look, I've been told this, and I've got to know if it's true or not." Right. And they go, no, that's not how it happened. This is how it happened. Or one of them just went, I don't remember. And then that's the end of it. And you go, fuck, this is what? So and that's where it finishes. That's where they go, he can't remember. He was fucked. So he can't remember. And you're like, there's got to be more than that. You know, I've got this information about that person in my head that I have to be in a room with. And you're walking around, you just went, I mean, listen, I'm not saying I've never molested anybody. That's not what I'm saying. But I've been, you know, I've probably done things in a relationship to get what I want. You know, subconsciously, you kind of like, you know, as you do.
Well, you grew up on porn, so you will be acting like that at some point.
Well, it's not even that. It's kind of, because I think what it is that we are human beings at base level, we're animals. And no one's talking about that. Everyone, like, yes, we're more sophisticated than your average, you know, whatever. But we're still base level. We are still animals, and men are fucking beasts. Underneath all that shit, we are dealing with all these thoughts that come ricocheting into your head when you see someone. You go, right, am I attracted to that person? Do I want to have sex with that person? Do I want to talk to that person? How do I make that person be attracted to me? And then and women as well. Women like Jade and I have had this massive conversations over the last couple of months. Yeah. We were talking about, you know, when you first get together, you portray yourself as the perfect person that person wants. So we met, and Jade was like, and I'm like, I'm saying to Jade, oh, I'm into this. And she's like, oh, me too. And I'm like, I'm into that. She's like, yeah, me too. I'm into this. She's like, oh, yeah, me too. And then you get into it a couple of years later, and then Jade's like, listen, that thing I said that I was into, I'm not really that into it, to be fair. And I don't mind doing it now and again, but it's getting a bit much when you want to do it all the time. And you're like, oh, shit, I had no fucking idea. So it's, you know, we're animals. And I think that's what we need to, which, you know.
We are animals, and I don't know. Like, you know, the sex, men and women, you know, like you say, different beasts potentially.
Yeah.
But also, you know, I touched on it just a second ago where I was like, well, you are going to have thoughts like that about women because, you know, it's so acceptable for boys to what, you know, if a 13-year-old boy gets caught wanking by his mum, it's like, oh, let's have a laugh about it. Oh, he's just, you know, just caught him, you know, he started on his sexual journey. Well done, son. You know, like you very rarely hear a mum say, oh, my God, I just caught, you know, Janine masturbating.
Yeah, it's almost, you know, like, it's like, yeah, it's like, you have to sit down.
Well, yeah, or that it's like that, like, again, it's culture, it's how we grow up in a culture. So you've got things like porn, and then, you know, just the other day I was having drinks with friends, like everyone is up in their 30s, and the word clitoris came into conversation, and a flippant joke was made by a friend of mine who is very intelligent and he's very creative, and, you know, he's a good friend, but he just remarked, like, oh, what's a clitoris? Where's that? And I just thought, are we still, like, you know, like, but this is the point, that it's like that men have all of the chances to talk about their sexual desires, and they, you know, but, and I think if women and men equally talked, and we sort of, it wasn't this sort of like potentially male dominated need to like shoot your load, that like that's the most important thing during sex, that a male ejaculates, then perhaps we'd all be having a lot more sex, especially people that had been in long-term relationships.
Yeah, absolutely.
But it's not really, I mean, it is guys' faults, but then it's not too, because we're all guilty of allowing this culture to have been created around us, which makes it complicated, you know. It does make it complicated for anyone involved with that. And
how
as a female you're ever supposed to compete with that, those images of women that young men have been looking at right up until the point where you enter into their life as a very naive and non-experienced female, because, you know, you don't get given a porn mag at 13 and, you know, and say this is how it's done. Men kind of, boys do in a way. I don't know. Is that right?
No, it's right. Well, do you know what? It was, I think it's worse now. Obviously, it's worse now because porn is so accessible. There's so much of it and there's everything. You put anything into a search engine and you will find what it is you're looking for, guaranteed. Yeah. And it'll be the most weird and extreme, whatever it is you're into, right? You'll find it, like hedgehogs dressed as Santa. There'll be some fucking mad shit, right? There'll be something like that. And it's like, but it wasn't like that when I was a kid. You'd find a picture in a paper.
My uncle used to have these like porn mags. There's a lot of time between him and my mum. So he was like at 18 when we were born, you know? So he had this drawer full of 80s mags with like girls with like hairy muffs and sort of like perms and stuff. And that was it. That was his little stash. And obviously that's all you had access to. So you are right, you know? I guess it's the same. Now there's anything and everything you want to look at.
Yeah. If I was a teenager now, I'd be dead. I'd be dead. It would, you know,
overwhelming access.
You know, yeah. I remember when I was a kid. I mean, the thing is with me, what the thing I like wasn't in these magazines. Jade and I spoke about this the other week. We had a bit of an epiphany, a bit of a realization about stuff. So the thing is with me, what I was into was I just like to see women. Like, so the teachers at my school, I wasn't very academic because I was so distracted because the women were dressed, as they were in the 80s, in skirts and tights and things like that. And that's what I like, is that I don't like to see women undressed and spread all over the bonnet of a car. I quite like that kind of conservative looking teacher kind of look, look. And we had this massive realization, oh, fuck, no wonder I couldn't concentrate, because the very thing that I'm into was in my face every single day.
Yeah, that must have been really hard.
It was fucking brutal. And I couldn't concentrate. I was just dealing with these thoughts in nearly all of my lessons.
Yeah. And so I guess these were sort of older women, if they're dressed quite conservatively. Was it like every lesson? Did it matter whether it was a particular teacher? Because I think as a female, you know, when you're young, it's like one person, you've got a complete crush on them. And it's like, I love you know, I won't mention any names, but, you know, I forever and that's it. And you're in love and that's, you know, the only thing you can do is be in love with that boy. And like, until you kiss him or until, you know, until you're married to that person, you know, I'm talking school years here.
Yeah.
But, you know, it didn't stop me from sort of, you know, concentrating on my work in school or, you know, I mean, I can't imagine how that must have felt for you to have this thing that distracted you so incredibly from your schoolwork that you couldn't get on with it.
I felt shame.
Yeah.
I thought it was something wrong with me because everybody else was finding pornographic magazines up the park and they'd all be sitting around going, oh, look at that, look at that. And I just wasn't interested. Yeah, I'd go to school and I'd be sat in English or maths and those were the two main problems. The main classes, and they were the two teachers. Because I think, like you've just said, men, we do kind of fall in love and go, oh yeah, you're the one. But we've always got an eye on
something else
over the shoulder as well. Do you know what I mean? So you're kind of like, you're the one. But maybe if you're not, there's that person over there. It's a weird, because.
But I just don't understand why are we after all of, the book, like men are from, you know, women from, et cetera, et cetera. Like we all know that men and women are different. So why are, and you know, that the world's moved forward and that there are many ways of living life and there are many ways of having a relationship. However, we are still trying to slot into this like very traditional way of being together. I've had some long-term relationships and, you know, they haven't worked out. We're all still friends, which is a credit to me as an...
yeah, well done.
You know, I don't burn bridges. Credit to the exes, you know, it's all good.
Yeah.
Forgiven, forgotten. It's all right. We're all getting on. But, you know, the reality of the situation is me looking back and having like retrospective on that and then moving forward, you know, some people would say you didn't choose the right person, but you know, I look around me and I see relationships, you know, marriages, long-term relationships, long-distance relationships, all of this stuff. And you know, 50% of marriages end in divorce, and this constant battle of like partners, whether that's male, male, female, female, and anything in between. It's this desire or this assumption that we can live together. Pay bills together, have children together, get married together, have sex together, watch films. Like everywhere you look, there's an expectation that, you know, that you're supposed to get on with this partner of yours and make it work in every aspect of your life. And it feels like that's an impossible task for anyone.
Yeah, well, I've read things on that and they said it isn't natural really for human beings to be that way. We're supposed to sort of spend a bit of time together. And then, you know, you go off and then you do something, you meet somebody else. And I feel like you say those old values where you meet that person and then that's it. And it doesn't matter if you get any feelings for anything else or you're fed up with this or this isn't working. You have to stay together. And that's why a lot of parents from the generation of my parents are just so unhappy.
Yeah.
They have nothing but disdain for each other. Like their attitude is like, we're here now, you know, fuck it. We might as well just get on with it. Like that's insane to have that mindset, you know?
But it's the nature nurture, isn't it? It's like, it's obviously in our nature to want to, you know, have sex with other human beings. That's part of what we're, like you say, animalistic. Mm. And then that's the nature. And we have to, you know, keep the human race going. And we do that by, you know, having babies.
Yeah.
And you know, then you've got the environment side of it, which is like, okay, we live in a really supposedly very liberal world, you know, you can kind of get on and do whatever you want and, you know, make your own decisions and choices. And then, but you know, within that you've got a situation where you don't really have a choice. You know, it's seemingly you should have a choice to like nature says you want to have babies and that's a thing that's built into us. Mm. Nurture tells us we can do what we want. However, regardless of the nurture and people say it's okay, it's, you know, you're free to do what you want, you know, strong, independent woman, that there's somehow there's still this like hang up about like not having children and not getting married and having to turn that into something that's like that you've got to be really proud of and really like act like proactive about and kind of have conversations with people. And, you know, people get deep and meaningful with you and they're like, oh, you know, really, like such a loss, you know?
Mm, yeah.
Such a loss not to get married, such a loss not to spend your life with someone. And I'm like, really?
there's definitely more pressure. We talked about this on an episode with Lizzie Basham, who's another friend of Jade's, and we were talking about
Lizzie's on the green. Lizzie?
Yes, that's it.
That,
yeah.
Lizzie? Well,
and I didn't
love Lizzie.
She's amazing. I love her. And it was it was nice to have the conversation because I'd never really had a proper conversation with a woman about what it actually feels like to have a period, what it actually feels like to deal with that biological clock ticking away, subconsciously telling you that you're running out of time. You don't even know what you're running out of time for.
But it's
like, yeah, you're like, shit, I've got to have a kid. And you're like, well, I don't really want one, but you've got to. That's in. And men don't have that. Men just fling their seed about and go, oh yeah, well, whatever happens. It's a funny
one. But I think men do make, you know, I think they say they don't really feel like that, but they obviously do because babies are made. So there's, whether they're kind of, you know, because you have to, like, and babies are made in very loving, you know, loving relationships.
Oh, definitely, absolutely.
Decisions to have babies and to, like, do that together and have that, like, bond and bring a relationship closer and form a family and all of those beautiful and wonderful things. So I do think men have desires to sort of have children, but whether they potentially fully understand the consequences of that.
Seems to be more about legacy with men. Something that's like chefs,
isn't it? You know, men cook for glory and women cook to nurture the family. It's the same sort of idea, I guess.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. And this is, and anyone
men
listening,
are glory chefs, women cook to feed their kids.
And anyone listening, any guys listening, look, this, I'm not being all down on men, all right? I think men do need to have a good old look at themselves and be a bit more
honest, society, you know? Needs to take responsibility. Yeah. Like schools need to take responsibility for teaching men, because if we're saying that men cause this a lot of pain and potentially, I mean, you know, the facts are there. We're not making this up, you know.
No.
Generally, when children are abused, it's men, or when women are abused. I mean, this is obviously not, but generally, it's the facts. I'm not making that up. But why are we not, you know, so if we're talking about that, like, you know, there's a pandemic happening in the world, a global pandemic. Well, there's been a global pandemic of abuse and men, you know, not behaving correctly for generations and generations. So, like, society has to take responsibility for men, not just men.
Well, it's being honest with men. Like I've just said, you get these, and someone will probably disagree with me, but this is what I think, is that we are battling with these animalistic thoughts on a daily basis. And men are just like, can I eat it? Can I fuck it? If I can't do any of those things, then it's no good to me. And that's what needs to be taught in schools. That needs to be taught to men. Need to be sat down and say, look, this is what you're going to think. You're going to have these weird thoughts, right? And but they're not weird, because really most men think about them. They have these thoughts, and you need to know what to do when you get these thoughts, you know, because it's in your nature to think that, but you don't act on it. And this is why, and then be taught these things, because that a lot of men.
We could do that. And we could equally ask women what they want.
When it comes to
the thoughts. So it's like, you know, women might be having thoughts about wanting to, you know, have sex with a beautiful guy, bigger ideas than that, whatever your sexual fantasies are. But it's like, is there a space and an arena for men and women to talk about those very equally and openly and honestly? I don't think there is. And, you know, maybe
start
teaching maths and English and start talking about what it means to
humanity.
Feel those desires. And, like, maybe we need to sort of speak to men more about those desires and how overwhelming they are. Or perhaps if we allowed women a bigger arena to talk about what they wanted, then men's desires would be put to the side. And it would all be about what women wanted within a sexual relationship. So I think it's going to have to be a bit of both, right? And that's what I meant by society has to take responsibility for the men that we raise.
But that's what I'm saying. It has to go right back to when they're children, all the way back to when they're kids. And then that's the only way, because there's no point in trying to take men aside or take women aside now and go, right, we're going to, you know, because by the time you're in your 30s, you kind of, you're formed
right?
And so that's what I found being 48 years old and going back and thinking about things I've done in my past and going, right, okay, that was a bit shit. Okay, let's not do that going forward. That was a shit one. But but most men don't really, a lot of people don't have that. They don't even think about it, think about things. They kind of go, well, this is just how I am. You know, and they don't, there isn't any sort of self-analysis. And I think there needs to be more of that. People need to be, it takes effort. It takes effort to make changes, and it takes effort to admit that you've been a bit shit in the past. And no one wants to admit that. Nobody at all.
I had to go and get some therapy to allow myself the space to say that when I felt guilty about the breakdown of, you know, relationships that I'd been involved with, because it's very easy to just say, oh, he's a cunt.
Yes.
And that's the end of it. But I, you know, or they were cunts. And like within that, you have to take responsibility. You do, you know, for the breakdown of a relationship. It's not always one way. And you also have to take, like you said, the conversation that you had with Jade. You know, Jade's just been honest with you and said she's lied about something to you for quite a long time. So, you know, which is in relation to what she said she thought was wanted at the beginning, and, you know, what how things are now, and not lie. I mean, lie is a strong word, but you know what I'm saying?
It's like, I know what you mean. Yeah.
We say things, we enter into situations with people, and then suddenly you're trapped into this way of thinking, and you think, I've got to stay here because this is what we've sort of said. But if everyone just loosened up, perhaps, and really listened to how we all felt, like really listened.
Yeah.
Because, you know, if someone tells you something and shows you something in relation to who they are and how they feel, then you have to listen. But we don't. None of us take responsibility for listening to other people's thoughts and feelings, because somehow it's affecting your day, you know?
Yeah, well, it's, like you said,
you've got some depressed person on your hands in the morning, and you're like, oh God, do I have to deal with you again today? And you're like, I just want to get on with my rosy day. You know, it's hard to take that time.
Yeah. Well, like you said, it's easy to say he's a cunt or she's a cunt, but it's harder to turn and go, why are they a cunt? What has got them? Why are they acting in that way? Why are they doing that? And then trying to figure it out, you know. And
also, why are we doing it? Like, why am I doing this as a female, as a woman? Why am I tolerating this behaviour from someone else? Or why are they tolerating that from me? Is that because society tells us to tolerate? Or is that just because I'm in love? You know, who knows? We don't, you know, it's all very kind of complex. And, you know, we wake up in the morning and all we're thinking about really is our own day. And, you know, you have rare people in life that don't do that. But I think the majority of us get up thinking, how is my day gonna, how do I, you know, this is my day, it's no one else's. And it's very hard to step outside of the way you feel. It's about whether you can give someone else the space in your life to be sad and to be emotional, and for that to not to affect you, and for you just to give them that moment for their demons to come and be present. And then hope that the next day when your black dog's barking at the door, that your friend or your partner is there to allow, you know, your time. But it's difficult because we're also caught up in our own
woes. And
and
like you say, we're kind of like, oh, we did this yesterday. Why are we doing this again today? We dealt with this, you know.
But you might have dealt with it, but they didn't, you know, and that's like...
Yeah, I know with Jade and I, you know, in other relationships, because, you know, we haven't had it easy. We've been figuring things out. And by now, old me would have been acting up, and I would have been maybe sneaking around, maybe talking to people that I shouldn't have been.
Yeah.
And now I don't. Now I don't want to, because I don't want to be that person. I don't want to cause pain to that other person, which is what I've done in other relationships. These people that cared about me and loved me, and I just shat all over them because I was wrapped up in my own bullshit. So this time, I'm not acting up and I'm not doing those things, but it's still those feelings still have to go somewhere. And sometimes Jade and I try and talk to each other, and it just ends up in a big blazing row. So then you start getting in this sort of like this whirlpool of, oh, fuck, I don't know what to do. I haven't got the usual things that release me from this pressure. I can't talk to Jay. And then I don't know what to do. And I've been sat a few times when I've been going, I genuinely don't know what to say or do to make this feeling go away.
Yeah.
And it's I don't know.
But again, it's like there's that, and it's like, but then everyone has to kind of take responsibility in those situations, you know, like I know you and Jade very well, so when you talk about these things, I know what you're talking about. And I think that it's like, you know, it's about taking responsibility for the action and the pain that you've caused other people, and then it's about moving on from that. And not just one person. Again, this is me back, going back to the idea that I had to take some therapy to accept my responsibility in the breakdown of my relationship. So, you know, we all have choices. We all have options and ways to move forward and onwards from the pain we've caused ourselves and each other.
Yeah.
But in order for, you know, in order for sort of you to change and for you to make those those changes in your life, there has to be a sort of place where, you know, Jade allows that to happen too, because she'll have her own hang-ups about the last few years and what you guys have been through and how things are. And again, it's the sort of the self coming into it. It's like, no, you know, you're making me so, like, I used to say that to my exes a lot. You're making me so unhappy, you know, and you're like,
I'm sad.
You're making me so sad. I want to throw a Henry Hoover at your face. Something like that.
Yeah. Well, you have to,
you know, like you and said, then you suddenly have to take responsibility for that. It's like, this person has inflicted pain on you. They have acted in a way, and the only thing you can control is the way you respond to that.
Hang on a minute. Jay,
what?
Can you not do that for a minute?
Sorry.
Do you know what, right? Every time Jay does something, like, we all have to be quiet or leave the room, she starts grinding
what's she cooking?
Fucking
donuts.
I don't know what she's doing. What is that? Is that the ice cream maker this time? It's pea soup.
Ooh, pea soup.
Yeah.
I haven't had pea soup for a while. Yummy.
And now she's all offended because I've told her to be quiet.
No. She's not offended.
All right.
She ain't offended. She deserved it. She's making pea soup in the background while you're trying to have a moment with her best mate.
Yeah, but I have to be quiet when she's doing stuff. And exactly. Then when it's my turn, she starts doing the fucking washing.
Well, someone's got to wear the trousers, mate. So, may as well be Jade. She's got a good collection.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
We're looking for a sponsor to help get this brilliant conversation to an even bigger audience. Sponsoring the show, as well as a promotional trailer, means that your message and our message will be inserted into some of Acast's biggest podcast titles. Get on board and partner with Insane in the Fembrain. Go to pauldaniels.tv for more information.
You're in a huge transitional period where, like you said, you ran Milgy for, 11 years? And then
13, yeah.
13 years. And then, and that was your entire life. And you talked about getting into art and going and studying again. And then suddenly You're now doing that, and Milgi is getting further and further in the past, and so you're now sort of finding out about yourself again. You know who, what you really are into, what you really like, who you really are. Because for 13 years you've been restaurant owner Becky Wynn Kelly, but now you're artist, and it's. So you haven't really got time. You know, the last thing you need is some fella walking out, hello, and just, you know, you need to attend to my needs for a bit. And you're like, what?
Yeah. Well, you know, obviously on reflection and having had quite a lot of time to myself over the last few years and not been in, you know, big relationships of any description, you know, the conclusion I've kind of come to is that I know exactly what kind of relationship I would like to have. Mm. It's whether society or the world sort of, whether that's sort of out there, you know. I don't mean like, oh, I'm going to scour Tinder with this sort of like, this is what I want, and you know, like in the sense that we've talked about and we touched about it before, it's like I cannot live, I know that I would not be able to live with someone day to day.
No,
like it would be really hard for me, I think, after having worked so hard on like myself and having enough time for my friends and people in need, and then also myself, and kind of knowing how kind of swept off your feet you can get when you first fall in love, and that lustful thing that happens, and it's just like nothing else matters in the world. You know, nothing else matters than like the gazing into that person's eyes and like making love to, you know, for the next 6 months or whatever it may be.
Yeah.
And, you know, after that runs out, then you're left with sort of the same thing, right? It's like, what are we eating for dinner? When are we going to see your parents to do this? That, like, you know, I just want a lover. Mm. So if there's anyone out there, get my details from
We'll put all your details on the end of this.
Put all the deets on, mate. If you want any photos, let me know. I'll send them over.
I was going to say, send us your favourite photo, the one you want out there.
Yeah, exactly.
you'll be inundated now.
Oh, mate, I can't wait.
This is something that people sliding into people's DMs, and this comes up a lot. Now, I know I've had it once or twice.
Yeah.
I rarely get it, but... Jade's fucking heckling me again. I've had it once or twice. But you haven't listened to the rest of what I'm about to say. Women seem to get it. Like, I've had it once or twice. Women get that, like, times 50. Women get it, seem to get it more, but people sign the DMs. And this other thing as well, I keep seeing this thing popping up, men asking for pictures of women's feet. And I'm like,
okay,
fuck is all this mess?
That's been going on for a long time. I had a friend... that lived in Cardiff, and she made enough money to go travelling to Thailand by putting her feet into baked beans in a bath. So this is nothing new.
See, now, do you know what? Because we've talked about it.
Where were you? You should have been right on that one, mate. She had loads of looks. Like, you walk in, she'd be like sort of like watching the telly as well as, and it was old school at the time. You know, they were these little digital cameras that used to sort of like upload to the computer, and she'd have these guys, you know, paying 20 quid for a sort of like Fuji film development of her feet, you know, in like roses or in a knick tied around her knickers or something like that, or like, you know, stuck in a cactus. Been going on for years, mate.
See, I know about all that. I used to read Bizarre magazine, and so I'm aware of it. But what blows my mind is that, I like feet, but I don't message strangers and go, can I have a picture of them, please? That's what I was talking about before.
But
about
isn't that just down
those...
to? But it's about women and it's about people who are attracted to each other, finding like a decent and kind of respectful way of kind of communicating that you might want to fuck them. You know, it's like, I think it does boil down to the fact that men are, you know, we are used to pornography just being at our, you know, and so it's sort of like, how are you supposed to compete with that? So guys just think, yeah, fuck it, I'll send a picture of my dick to her. So, I mean, and let's face it, they're not the most attractive of things anyway, are they, dicks?
No, man. I've never seen what a photo of a dick and gone, that's a handsome
thing. Whoa, oh, mate.
Never, ever.
Yeah.
Well, I joke about that in my set, and I say, I think a lot of men see it as like fishing. Like they send the maggot out, and they're like, yeah.
So oh, mate.
Maybe it's that.
And we know that all, you know, fly fishing comes different shapes and sizes. How, I mean, you know.
Yeah.
So it's that. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. It's communication. And let's face it. We're not nailing it, are we? Because marriages are not, you know, 50% of marriages end in divorce. People are arguing. People are hurting each other. So, you know, we need to re-educate everyone, yeah. I think. All of us need to find compassion and empathy for each other. And, you know, yeah. that's not going to work if one person is not, like, you know, if they're, like, apathetic towards that, or if they're kind of, like, not willing to give and receive in that same way. I mean, there's no chance in hell unless we all sort of say, right, from now on in, this has to stop.
Yeah. Well, this has come up many times before. Communication is so important. Everyone's just shouting and hollering about, like with the trans issues at the moment, everyone's just shouting and hollering. Both sides are shouting and hollering and accusing and this, that, and the other. And you're like, this isn't getting anybody anywhere. On all levels, regardless of what you're talking about, you're not going to get anything done. The only way we're going to do this is if we sit down and we have a proper chat. Like Jade and I, with therapy, like it's shown us that rather than calling each other names and shouting and hollering, if we just sit down and go, look, this is what's going on with me. And it's so important. It's so important. But I think, again, that needs to go back to when we're children. That needs to be taught.
Yeah.
That, you know, you're not going to do it now, but the next generation of children, now the generation, you know, children, it needs to be taught to kids. It should be part of the curriculum.
Absolutely. You know? I mean, you know, Pythagoras' theorem has not got me anywhere in life, so I would have rather known how to deal with the suicide of my friend or the fact that someone sent me a dick pic. I'd quite like to know how to deal with that.
Yeah, exactly. And that's and that's how we would, I think that's how we'd lower the numbers, because the numbers for the people that have committed suicide are obscene, and it breaks my heart. And I'm talking to you now about your friend, and you're like, what, as you were telling me, I was like, fuck, imagine getting to that point where, because I've been to that point where I've got no one to talk to. I don't know what to do, but really, there was something subconscious in me that never made me go the full way. It was always there was always something that brought me back, whether that's my sons or something sort of brought me back. But to get to that point where you just feel like there's nothing left, you're like, there's absolutely no reason for me to be here. Just, it's heartbreaking, you know?
But that's, you know, again, that sort of like, that is society failing these people, or, you know, those people who, I mean, even friends that I've had that, you know, are very, you know, like, yeah, like not rescue, you know, yeah, I've been called a couple of times and said, look, you know, I'm ready to go. Will you come?
Wow.
And, you know, I've gone. And, you know, the reasoning behind all of that was like, as far as I could see with this particular person, was like, you know, like unrecognized issues from a really long time ago, and like, you know, self-medicating and getting so low that, you know, having dealt, like, it's about people carrying things from their childhood right the way through that they just can't deal with and have never been given the time or the space to deal with it. And suddenly, you know, as an adult, it's all too much because they've never really sort of had to become, could never really become an adult because they're too engaged with the pain of childhood. And that's where it sort of, it can end, you know.
And were you aware that she might do something like that? Was it just out of the blue?
Well, I knew how low she was, and you know, I was part of her kind of coming out, if you like, as a victim of abuse.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's an incredible story. You know, it should be made into a film, really. But, you know, I was aware of her mental health issues. I was aware that she was low, and rightly so. I mean, the pain that she went through and the abuse that she suffered was, you know, second to none. You know, awful. No human being should have to go through that. So, you know, of course, I was aware that she was low, and you know, she, but I was, so I was running my restaurant, you know, just opened the restaurant, so my only sort of advice, all I could say was come to me, you know, come and work with me, and let's, you know, I'll take care of you. And you know, that never happened. But you know, she called me, like, you know, this is another thing about sort of mental health issues. You know, she called me, it was, you know, like I was aware that she was unwell and was suffering because we would have lengthy conversations on the phone about her sadness and about how she felt. And on the weekend that she died, I didn't take the call on the Friday. And then on the Saturday, she drove her car into the sea over a cliff in a storm, you know.
Fucking hell.
I don't. So, yeah, I was aware. And then, I mean, I wouldn't say that I felt guilty for not taking that call, because I think that that one conversation might save that person's life for that moment in time. Mm. However, those feelings have to be addressed.
Yeah, they wouldn't have gone away, yeah.
Exactly. They would never go away, you know. But so, yeah, of course I was aware that she was... I'm aware that lots of my friends have suicidal thoughts, but there doesn't... It's, you know, you would imagine that you could just go to the doctor and say, you know, I'm not feeling very well. I feel sad. And it seems to me that what happens is they put, well, they have, in my experience, friends of mine, you know, it's medication and that's what happens. And then I've had friends that have spent years kind of numbed by the situation and like lack of any feeling. And then other friends who've chose not to do that but suffered immensely, but still with no therapy or no support or, you know, and sometimes it feels like it's not until it's too late that help is given. You know, why can't we just go to, why can't we just go? Like, you know, I've got a sore throat. It's been there for 3 days. I go to the doctor. They might give me some penicillin.
Yeah.
I've been feeling shit for a week, like shit, like really shit, like, I'm crying all the time. I don't want to go to work. I kind of know why I feel like that because, you know, my boyfriend's left me for a pop star, but, you know.
Mentioning no names.
Mentioning no names. No, so circumstantial grief and circumstantial depression. But you know full well, if you go to the doctor and you say to them how you're feeling, they're going to prescribe you some tablets that will affect your life for a very long time. What I want to be able to do is when I'm feeling shit for 3 days, I want to go to the doctor and say, I'm feeling shit, mate. I've been really down. I can't get over this. And they say, oh, you're in the wrong surgery, mate. You need to be over there in the mental health clinic, which is always available for us as human beings to go and talk about how we feel, because there isn't that space. And, you know, like friends of mine who, like, you know, especially people, like friends like with addiction, and they at that moment where they're like, I'm ready, you know, I'm ready to get some help.
Mm.
And you arrive at the GP's and they're like, come back in 3 weeks. And you're just like, ah!
Yeah.
Like, how can you say that to a person who's like this unwell?
Yeah, I know.
You know,
yeah.
And then they, you know, like I say, the best they can do is feed them with meds. And, you know, I don't know. It feels like there needs to be a reform of that aspect of our health service and healthcare, because a 15-minute chat with someone that's qualified to help you through a moment of grief or pain, or a lot, or not even a moment, a lifetime of grief or pain, should be readily available to every single person who pays their taxes or who puts their national insurance in here. Because, you know, I might not need treatment for cancer through my life, but I might need treatment when I'm sad, or, you know, or when I feel like I just need to talk to someone that like isn't my mate, or is someone that's qualified to guide me through that pain.
Yeah, I think investment is what's needed. They need to have proper investment in the NHS and for mental health treatments and all, because what happens is because they're in the pockets of the chemical companies, the pharmaceutical companies, so they want to straight away, they go, oh yeah, I'm going to bung you on this, and that's going to pay my mortgage, and that's going to, so if you take that away and have proper investment in that, in these services, I think it'd be, I think the world would be such a better place. But it's, you know, it's greedy cunts that don't care about people.
Yeah, but I mean, look at you, in a sense that you've acknowledged recently, you know, you're nearly 50, that you had some issues in school that, you know, perhaps if there was someone you could have talked to them about, that might not have progressed through all of your life, and there might not have been how shit you feel now for the actions that you've taken, or, you know, it should be about anything. If you recognize that you're like, I mean, an unwell is quite a sort of, I don't know whether that's the right term, but feeling unwell or feeling like something's not right within you as a human being is equal in my eyes as sort of saying, you know, my toe's got a bunion on it, can you remove it? It's painful and it hurts me and it stops me from, you know, running around after my kids. Well, you know, grief and depression can stop you from running around after your kids, but you still just have to crack on, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, I don't know, it's a strange thing. But I guess, like, again, we said, you know, we're kind of still bogged down with ancient ways of living, even though we've moved on technologically, and it just feels like, more work to be done.
Well, we feel like, people have been talking about, you know, looking after yourself for years since I was a kid. Like you had Mr. Motivator in the morning, getting you up and getting you exercising. But that's only 30 odd years ago. This feels like the first generation of people that are actually striving to make actual changes to our behaviors, to the way we look at each other, the way we interact with each other, you know? And so we won't benefit really, but the next generation will. So all this work that we're doing is to benefit people going forwards, you know. So it's even though we won't see it probably, but I think it's doing good. At least we're trying. Well, the majority of us are anyway.
Absolutely, yeah. And asking questions and feeling confident enough to sort of, you know, potentially take down the status quo, even though it feels like an impossible task.
Yeah, well, we've talked about that loads. I mean, you need to get rid of the 5 white racist paedophiles that run the world. Once that happens, maybe the system will change. We were saying, even if you got a woman in there, like to have a woman running things up there, but then you're like, yeah, but she'd probably be as big a cunt as the rest of them. That's how she got there.
Well, you got to remember that women, you know, Donald Trump didn't get into power because he just got the male vote. There's women out there voting for him too, you know. So
exactly.
It's this, so how we take them down is a different question. I mean, who
God
knows?
But we'll do our best. We'll do what we can.
We'll do our best to keep on fighting.
We will. This has been fucking amazing. Thank you so much for being
my
guest.
Absolutely.
I've got to be honest, because obviously you're Jade's best mate and we've hung out and drunk and things, and it was like, I genuinely was like, how the fuck is this going to play out? But it's been fucking great. I've loved it. Thank
good,
you.
I'm glad you enjoyed it. It's very natural, and thank you for inviting me. And
it's my pleasure.
Kudos to you for sort of giving women and people the space to sort of share their thoughts, and that you're listening and, you know, taking it on board and...
I love it. I've loved this. This has been great. Where can people find you on? Are you on the socials?
The usual socials, just Rebecca Wynne Kelly, and that's it. All over. That's the socials. Apart from Twitter, I don't do Twitter. I feel a little bit that that's not the right place for me.
I wouldn't go on Twitter at the minute. It's on fire. it's a proper bin fire at the minute. It's not the place.
Lush to speak to you, Rich, and I'm sure I'll see you over the next couple of days in your boxer shorts having a cup of coffee in the morning at some point.
Produced by Paul Daniels at pauldaniels.tv.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.